ready to make fashion fireworks? Right now at Old Navy, get up to 60% off the entire store during Old Navy's Red, White, and New sale. Save big with items for $2, $4, $6, and $8, including women's tanks for just $2. And up to 60% off summer essentials like flip-flops, tank tops, swimwear, and shorts. Get more bang for your buck with up to 60% off your favorite all-American styles right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Select styles only. Entire store offer valid 6/28 to 7/5. Excludes clearance, gift cards, register lane items, jewelry, today-only deals, today-only deals.
Back 9 Report. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and checking on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Hey, Carlos. I had a great week off last week. Thanks again to Kieran Clark for filling in. I spent some time traveling across Colorado, Wyoming, and South Dakota with the grandkids, but I'm excited to be back to golf this week, as we have not one, but two major championships to preview this week. Jordan Spieth, his win at the Travelers is drawing comparisons with Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods. Sergio came up just a bit short in Germany. So-Young Yu became the first repeat winner on the LPGA Tour this season. So, Carlos, we got a lot of golf to talk about, so let's go.
And we have also Jane Blaylock and Jen Stephenson. They're going to be talking about the LPGA Senior Championship. So that's going to be in French Lake. We're going to have a short interview with them, so you don't want to miss that. But before we go into the backspin, Fred, I know. I mean, we all have our own things that we go here and promote them and all that, and we know that you're big on caddies. Last week, Kieran Clark and I discussed the split between one of the most iconic player caddy pairings of all time, and that was Phil Mickelson and Jim Bones McKay. And I cannot start the show without asking you your take on it. So tell us, what's your take on this incredible split?
Well, you know, that was a complete shock and surprise, as I'm sure it was to you guys. I just never imagined. I thought they would be together until Phil decided to completely hang them up. I just never imagined that they would split up. Really shocking. I was telling my wife about it after I heard about it. She said, well, that's like a divorce. Oh, my God, that is so sad. And so, you know, I'm sure it took everyone by surprise. But, I mean, we shouldn't be. You know, caddies and players split up and change all the time. They feel like maybe they get a little bit too set in their ways and they need to change things up a little bit. Somebody new maybe brings a new dynamic to the relationship and maybe gets the player fired up a little bit more. So, you know, it's amazing that happened. But I just wonder, you know, Bones had both his knees operated on over the winter. You know, he's still coming back. There was one tournament this year where he couldn't go. He had to sit out. And so I think they've kind of been discussing this for a while. Phil said yesterday at the, you know, at the women's KPG, PGA, that they had been talking about it for a while. And they were actually, the U.S. Open was going to be their last tournament together. But since Phil didn't play in that, it turned out the last tournament turned out to be in Memphis. So, yeah, I just don't it's sad, but, I mean, that's the way it happens. Bones is an outspoken guy. I wouldn't be surprised that we'll see him on television someplace. There's so many opportunities with the networks or, you know, with Golf Channel or somebody. I wouldn't be surprised to see him pop up on our TV set somewhere. So. But we wish the best of Bones. He's been outstanding for Phil over the years. They're still going to be friends. They're still, you know, close. They're just not going to be working together as a caddy and player.
Yeah, I think you nailed it when you said that was like a marriage, because definitely that's how it felt. That's how it felt, their relationship and everything that they stood together. And that, like you said, they also communicated that this wasn't something, a one-off thing, and I got mad at you and go your way and I go my way. It was something that they have been discussing, some things that might have been happening. We don't have that insight. But definitely it shouldn't have been a one-off thing. And, well, I mean, like you say, maybe somebody else new comes and Phil might get a little more fired up. And but I definitely see, like you say, now that you mention it, seeing Bones maybe on television doing some insight, maybe on course or something like that, because he definitely is very knowledgeable. And like you say, he is very outspoken. So definitely he can be worth anywhere he goes. But I second that. We wish him the best, to him and to Phil, of course, and his new caddy, whoever it's going to be. But anyway, let's move on now to the weekend backspin. Fred, the Travelers Championship on the PGA Tour, I was unable to watch that ending. I was really pulling for Daniel Berger. I have this soft spot for him ever since I wanted him to be in the President's Cup a couple of years ago, and he's been doing great, and he's just there. I think Jordan needed this as well, but I thought that Daniel was gonna squeeze there and win it after Jordan wasn't able to separate himself. But anyway, tell us all the details about that remarkable win by Jordan Spieth.
Well, it was fun. You know, Berger posted his score early, and you know, the leaders still had two or three holes to go, and so they had to try and match that or better it. But really, probably the biggest story of the week there at the Travelers was the strength of the field. There's a regulation that the PGA Tour has, which requires players who didn't have at least 25 starts in the previous season to add an event to their schedule that they hadn't played in the last 4 years. Well, you know, because of some guys have been off with medical things like Rory and a couple other guys, they didn't meet that 25 tournament criteria last year, and so here's a place that nobody's really been over the last 4 years, so they got a really good field. Six players who finished inside the top 10 at the U.S. Open were in the Travelers Championship field. Brian Harman, who, you know, was a factor. Xander Schauffele, Charlie Hoffman, who's been playing lights out this year, Trey Mullinax, Justin Thomas, who's a draw, and Brant Snedeker. The field included 12 of the top 30 in the FedEx Cup standings, three of the top six in the official world golf ranking, Rory, who I mentioned, Jason Day, and Jordan Spieth. In all, 13 major championship winners were in the field, which accounted for 24 major titles. So it was a very strong field, so that made it interesting right there. Well, Rory, as I mentioned, was in the field, but there still seems to be a little rust on his clubs. He couldn't get anything going until Sunday when he finally posted a 64, moved up 43 spots to finish tied for 17th. Maybe this could be something he can build on going forward. You know, he has a couple really big events coming up in Europe over the next few weeks, and maybe this can kind of be a run-up for him up to the Open Championship. Justin Thomas, as I mentioned, and Bubba Watson both missed a cut, but Jordan Spieth made the most of his time in Connecticut last week. Spieth held both the 36 and 54-hole leads. Consistency has been the issue with him this year. Seems like he always makes a double or triple bogey one or two days a week, and it really affects his week, as he struggled with that again this week. He ranked 52 in driving distance at 290 yards, 41st in the field in fairways hit. So if you're hitting it short and driving it off the fairway, that's not good. And he was only 35th in greens in regulation. In proximity of the hole with his approach shots, you know, he still wasn't a great number. So when you look at these stats, one wonders how he finished inside the top 25, let alone won the tournament. Well, he was among the leaders in scrambling all week, and his scrambling is what eventually won the day for him. His final round featured three bogeys and three birdies for an even par round of 70, but his putting was woeful. Woeful! It looked like he was close to the yips on the greens. I mean, some of those putts he was making Sunday, ooh, they made me cringe. He could have won by four shots if he could have just putted halfway decent. He had all kinds of birdie putts. At the final hole, knowing he needed a birdie to win or par to tie Daniel Berger, who was in the clubhouse at 12 under, he dumped a wedge shot into the front bunker. I mean, he missed it by 15, 20 yards. He nearly holed the sand shot that saved his par and went to the playoffs. playing 18 again in the playoff. Spieth caught a tree off the tee and was left with over 200 yards to the green. Once again, he found nearly the identical spot in the front bunker. But this time, he holed it for the win. It was yet another incredible finish for the 23-year-old Texan. The win gives Spieth, just short of his 24th birthday, 10 PGA Tour wins, including the two majors, and makes him the second youngest to reach the 10-win mark, just behind Tiger Woods and ahead of Jack Nicklaus. That's pretty good company to be in right there, Carlos. Daniel Berger had another great week, shooting 3-under, 67, forcing the playoff with Spieth. This was his fifth top 10 this year, and with $3.6 million, he is number 8 on the FedEx Cup standings. He stated in his post-round interview, the FedEx Cup Championship is definitely on his mind. Other players who continue to post good finishes, Charlie Hoffman had a T3 and has become a top 10 machine. Patrick Reed and Paul Casey both finished at T5. Although he struggled on Sunday with an even par 72, Brew Weekly entertained fans and also finished in T5. Carlos, do you see this performance by Jordan Spieth as him rounding into form for the remaining majors, the Open Championship and the PGA, plus another run at the FedEx Cup?
I don't know. He hasn't been consistent. He's like earlier in the year when he won the tournament, we expected him to just go, okay, he's back. But he wasn't. He took another dip. He's like a roller coaster right now. He's not that model of consistency that he used to be before. And that's why I am like, the jury's still out. I have to wait and see before I actually tell you, hey, yes, I'm all for it. He's back, and let's go to see if he goes again. All four majors, that run like he had a couple of years ago. But no, I still don't see it. Until I see more solid all four rounds. And also that I think he has lost this fire, this confidence. He doesn't look like that confident player before. I don't know if you've noticed that. He used to have this glance, this look, like I can top the world, and I just don't see it anymore. Until I see that, Fred, I don't know if you have noticed what I'm saying, but it's like there's a different side of confidence from him that is lacking.
I agree with you 100%. And things are bothering him on the golf course, distractions, missing putts, and he does not have the confident putting stroke that he had when he was making everything from everywhere back in 2014-2015. It's just not there. And that happens. When you're out there on tour, you start second-guessing yourself. You hit some wayward shots, you miss a few putts, and it gets in your head. And I really think that's where it's at right now. And he said, and you know, you didn't see it, but Peter Kostas was saying that Michael Geller was doing a wonderful job managing Spieth around the back nine. Because you could see him getting frustrated, especially at the end of the front nine and the beginning of the back nine. He missed some putts, and you could just see Geller working with him and talking to him and making him stay in the moment. And then when he missed that one short putt, I think it was on 16 or 17, Geller actually went over and kind of pushed him off the putt. Jordan was just going to step up and bang it in, and it was about a 4.5 footer. And Geller went over and kind of said, hey, let's talk about it, and just kind of made Jordan stop, take a breath, relax, and then he could step up and stroke the putt. And Peter Kostas was saying what a great job Geller was doing, and Jordan made mention of it in his post-round interview, or later on he said, Michael probably did the best job of caddying. He couldn't have done it without Michael. And that's, we talk about caddies, Carlos. There's a perfect example of what a caddy means to a player in a situation like that.
Like you said, I didn't see it, but I don't doubt it. I mean, that's what Michael Geller has meant for Jordan Spieth throughout his young career, and they're definitely another pair that I would be really surprised if they go split, just as surprised as I was when Bones and Lefty split up. Hey, let's talk a little bit about the LPGA now. Soyeon Yoo, she clinched the number one ranking in women's golf after winning the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship in Rogers, Arkansas on Sunday. Ryu, she lifted the trophy with a tournament record 18 under 195, edging out runners-up Hee Yung Yang, better known as Amy Yang, and Moria Yutanagar by two strokes. Hey, Moria has been popping up into the leaderboards more and more often. Ryu's victory moved her to number one from third place in the world rankings, and she's the third Korean to reach the top of women's golf after Hee Jae Shin and In Bae Park. Sunday's win earned Ryu $300,000 and put her back on top of the money list with $1.21 million this season. She's also became the LPGA Tour's first two-time winner this season, having also won the A&A Inspiration, the first major of the season back in April. In Arkansas, she shot a course record 10 under par 61 during Saturday's second round to take a commanding five-shot lead into the final round on Sunday. Ryu's two under par 69 in the final round then allowed her to hold on for that two-shot victory. And although she had a comfortable lead hitting into the final round, she did not let up. I mean, she had a minor setback with a bogey on the 11th hole, but finished with three birdies on the final round to claim victory. Michelle Wee, she continues her recent great form. She finished in a T4 with Stacey Lewis, five shots back. In Bae Park finishing a T6 with Min Jae Lee, Nicole Brock Larson, and American Marina Alex finished T8. Other notable finishers were Anna Nordqvist, Jarena Pillar, and Rookie of the Year Sung Hyun Park, T19. Susan Pedersen finishing a bunch at 30, T44, that included Julie Inkster, who, by the way, happy birthday, Julie. You turned 57 yesterday, so happy birthday. She keeps just beating the clock, the age clock. And among those missing the cut was Paula Creamer. Man, she's on the old polar opposite side of Michelle Wee towards making the Solheim Cup team. I mean, only a miracle will see her make that team. But Ryu's ascension to number one has taken some golf fans by surprise. I mean, her career haul of five tour titles since her debut in 2012 is modest compared to previous top-ranked players, but she has consistently managed to play well. I mean, she's the model of consistency. She has been avoiding ups and downs and never, ever failing to make the top 10. Fred, the only thing that has overshadowed her win in Arkansas and the ascension to number one was that four-stroke penalty assessed to world number four Lexi Thompson after a rules violation reported by a television viewer against the American golfer in the third round of the A&A Inspiration. But in my book, she has earned every bit of that world's top ranking.
Oh, you know, she won the 2011 U.S. Women's Open before she was an LPGA Tour member. And then she came here to Toledo in 2012, won the old Jamie Farr, which is now the Maryland Classic here in Toledo. And back then, I had the chance to talk with her, did an interview, and spent some time with her. And she is such a classy lady. I just love her. I love her game. She is, like you say, she is so consistent. Other than Stacey Lewis, I see, and, well, Lydia Ko, when she was going through her run, she's not there right now, but you know, Lydia Ko is that kind of player also. So Lydia Ko, So Young Yu, and Stacey Lewis are by far the three most consistent players on the LPGA Tour, just week in and week out. They're always making top tens. So Young Yu had so many, runners-up last year. I didn't go back and look at it, but I think it was like five or something like that last year. So, she deserves it. She's a great player, and I just love her, and I love her game. Hey, Carlos, we had a tournament on the Champions Tour, and guess who showed up last week? Freddie Couples decided to play after a couple months off, made a rare appearance at the American Family Insurance Championship in Wisconsin, and collected a trophy as well as a check for $300,000. This was only his seventh start on the Champions Tour this season, but he has six top 10 finishes, including two wins and a runner-up. At 57 years old, if he shows up, he plays very well. Couples began the final round three shots behind the leader, Paul Broadhurst, but made six birdies in his first 11 holes on Sunday to post a 6-under par 66 to take the two-shot win. Scott Verplank couldn't make any birdies down the stretch and finished runner-up. Tournament host and American Family Insurance brand ambassador Steve Stricker tied for third with Joe Durant and had an impressive week, considering the lack of rest he's had this month after qualifying for the U.S. Open at Erin Hills, making the cut, finishing T16. He then went directly to Madison to perform his hosting and duties there for the American Family Insurance tournament. And so Strick said, you know, I'm tired. This is 6 out of 7 weeks playing, and the last two have been full excitement and pressure. It's been great, don't get me wrong, but I'm ready for a little time off, get away from the game a little bit, and then come back again, recharge, and refresh. So he announced that he's withdrawing from the U.S. Senior Open this week, citing that he needs some time off, which is really unfortunate because Stricker on the senior tour, I mean, he's got to be one of the favorites every time he tees it up. So, but I can understand, you know, he's been in the pressure cooker the last month, and he's still dealing with all the President's Cup stuff that he's got going on here later in the year. So he's got a lot on his plate, so he needs some time off.
I totally agree. He still has time. I mean, he's just getting started on the senior tour. So, and he can still hit it with the young guys. So I understand. And most of it is because of the President's Cup. I think you nailed it there. There's a lot of preparation that has to be made, and he has to get all that done. But anyway, another week and another out-of-nowhere winner on the European Tour, as Argentina's Andrés Romero secured his first European Tour title in 10 years with a superb final round of 65 in the BMW International Open in Munich at Golf Club München Eichenried. After a thrilling final round, Romero, he finished one clear of Belgium's Thomas Dietrich, Richard Bland of England, and Masters champion Sergio Garcia. Romero looked to be heading for a solid finish midway through his final round, but a victory seemed unlikely until he picked up birdies at the 8th and 9th holes, then 3 in a row from the 13th. As the Argentinian began to make some gains, the other contenders started to falter, and with 3 to play, four players held the lead. It was Romero, Richard Bland, Dietrich, and Sergio, all four. Then Romero birdied the final hole to post a four-round total of 271, with Dietrich then had a chance to match the Argentinian, but he failed to convert his birdie chance on the last hole. Sergio, oh man, he bogeyed the 16, and then Richard Bland bogeyed the 17th to drop two shots behind. Both needed to eagle the last to force a playoff. Neither did it. Garcia missed then the green with his second and couldn't hold the pitch. Bland hit a great shot within 12 feet of the pin, but the putt slipped by. They had to settle for the share of second place. Other notables, Tommy Fleetwood, T6, with the winner of the Nordia Masters, Renato Paratore. Henrik Stenson had a T10 with American David Lipsky, who, by the way, is 19th on the race to Dubai. He's very silently moving up that race there. Bernd Wiesberger at T20, Rafa Cabrera Bello, T26, Ernie Els, T59, Eduardo Molinari, T73, and Martin Keimer was among the ones who missed the cut. Hey, Romero took the win, which is his first on the European Tour since the Deutsche Bank Players' Championship of 2007. It's worth noting that he was a tournament invite there in Munich. He hadn't even played a regular European Tour event since the 2012 BMW Masters and hadn't secured a top 10 finish on the circuit since the BMW PGA Championship of 2008. He now has a two-year exemption on that tour. Sergio Garcia, like you mentioned earlier, he just came up just one shot shy of forcing that playoff, but the Masters champion was pleased for Romero. He congratulated him, said, hey, that's how you play. I mean, he was an invite and given his best and won it. You remember our first show of the year, our previous show. I mentioned the name to watch, one of the names to watch on the European Tour, 24-year-old Thomas Dietrich of Belgium. It was a great week from him. He's jumped all the way to 53rd now on the race to Dubai. This is just his 17th tournament on the European Tour, and it was his best finish to date. He played some superb golf to close with a 66, and he had a chance to tie Romero at the top, but just missed his birdie chance on the final hole. Fred, keep that name in mind, Thomas Dietrich. He's gaining confidence every week in the European Tour.
Yeah, this is a big deal for Romero, though. As you mentioned, coming from off a sponsor's exemption, hasn't won forever, had no status on the tour, on the European Tour. So this is a big deal for him. He gets into this week's French Open, which is a big money deal. It's a Rolex Series thing, so it's a $7 million purse. If he could have another good week this week, man, he could really set up his year and really do some big things. Hey, Carlos, you would not think that shank is a good name for a professional golfer. But a shank was good enough to win on the Web.com Tour and probably punch his ticket to the PGA Tour next year. Adam Shank, to be exact, played his college golf at Purdue, Big Ten, you know, and grew up a little over 3 hours away from Panther Creek Country Club in Springfield, Illinois, the site of the Web.com Tour's Lincoln Land Charity Classic. The 25-year-old from Southern Indiana buried a 25-foot putt on the second playoff hole to defeat Eric Axley, William Kropp, and Kyle Thompson. Although this was Shank's 37th career Web.com Tour start, it was his first time in contention, and the nerves were evident. After 9 pars to start the round, he made costly mistakes and lost his lead at number 12 when he made a double bogey. He bounced back with a birdie at the next, but quickly gave it back with a bogey at the 15th. Finally, with a 1-stroke lead at the last, Shank pulled his second under the grandstands, took relief, and failed to get up and down for par. Shank's miss at the home hole gave Axley, Kropp, and Thompson, who held the 54-hole lead, another crack at the title. All 4 players parred the first extra hole, had to replay 18 one more time. Shank hit his approach shot on the second playoff hole to almost exactly the same place as the first time they played the hole. He watched as the other 3 missed their putts, giving him a chance for the win. He was able to get the putt to fall in for victory. Shank entered the season with the goal of ending the season number 1 on the money list, but missed the cut in 5 of the first 6 events this year. He turned it around and came into this week with a good finish, a T4 at the Air Capital Classic last week. The win moves him to number 11 on the Web.com Tour money list and should assure one of the 25 cards for the 2018 PGA Tour season, Carlos.
And other results on the Challenge Tour, Sweden's Oscar Stark collected his first win on that tour on Sunday with a 14-under 274 total at the Made in Denmark Challenge at Royal Oak Golf Club. He closed with a 3-under 69 in windy conditions. Another result, Luna is the Spanish word for moon. Well, on the European Tour Senior Tour, Santiago Luna is over the moon after carding a final round of 71 to win the inaugural European Tour Properties Senior Classic by 1 stroke over André Bossert and his compatriot Miguel Angel Martin, securing his 3rd European Senior Tour title at Lena Golf Course. The Spaniard, who held the overnight lead by 1 shot, moved to 13 under par after 11 holes and maintained his lead on the back nine despite 3 bogeys on the last 6 holes. And on the Symetra Tour, Emma Talley, she joins a short list to win at every level. At the amateur level, she won the 2013 U.S. Women's Amateur Championship. At the collegiate level, she won the 2015 NCAA Individual National Title. And now she picked up her first professional win on Sunday at the Island Resort Championship and now ranks 4th on the Volvic Race for the Card money list. The top 3 on the tight Volvic Race for the Card: Nana Cortes Martin, she finished T5 and still leads, but now by just over $3,000 over Benyapa Nymfatsafon. Yes, I said it, Nymfatsafon from Thailand.
It's easy for you to say. Don't hurt yourself. Did you strain anything when you said that?
Yeah, we were talking, Kieran and I, that I have to take the tough last name here on the show. So Benyapa Nymfatsafon, who made the huge leap to second after her T2 finish and $12,239 paycheck. Celine Boutier, she dropped a spot to third after her T18 finish. And the name I said to watch last week, Tiffany Shen, she finished T13. Fred Talley is just the fourth player ever to win the U.S. Women's Open, I mean the U.S. Women's Amateur Championship, the NCAA title, and a professional event on the Symetra Tour and or LPGA. The other three are Pat Hurst, Ray Spark, and here it goes, Virada Niran Phanporn. Okay, Niran Phanporn from Thailand too. Those Thailand have some huge last names. So those are the other three. Any final comments before we move on to the four call, Fred?
No, just that we've been talking about Emma Talley for a couple years now. We've been following her, and she is a star in waiting. I look for her to move right up the LPGA next year and start to do some really good stuff. I think she's just been building slowly and slowly, kind of feeling her way. Once she gets comfortable on the LPGA level, she is a very good talent. And I have to tell you, we have a young lady here in town who's a very good high school golfer who just qualified for the U.S. Girls Junior Championship. Her name is Pina Pipat Jarskit. That is a Thai name also. So, and I've been dealing with writing her name now for about 3 years as we've on the local news here in Toledo. I write about different things, and she's always popping up there in the local junior tournaments and stuff. And so, those long names, man, they are difficult.
They surely are. Hey, with that, we wrap up our weekend vaccine. Now let's move on to the look ahead, the four call. And I was going to talk about the LPGA, one of the two majors this week, but that's going to be in our practice range. So I'm going to pass it out to you, Fred, to talk about the Champions Tour and the U.S. Senior Open.
Yeah, just briefly, this is going to be the 38th U.S. Senior Open and the 6th USGA National Tournament held at Salem Country Club, just outside of Boston. The course will play to 6,815 yards and a par of 35-35, total 70. Salem Country Club is a classic Donald Ross design and open for play in 1925. It has hosted five previous USGA events, most notably. Babe Diedrich Zerharias claimed her third women's open in 1954, just months after surgery for colon cancer. She died 2 years later. Her four-round total of 291 was 12 strokes better than her nearest competitor. She remains the championship's oldest winner at the age of 43. Holly Stacey also won her third U.S. Women's Open at Salem in 1984. The USGA accepted 2,680 entries for the 2017 U.S. Senior Open. Entries were filed by golfers in 48 states, 81 from Massachusetts alone, and the District of Columbia, as well as 25 foreign countries. The record number of entries is 3,100 from 2002. Gene Sowers won this prestigious tournament last year at Scioto Country Club. The 156-man field will be cut to a low 60 and ties after the second round. Some featured pairings this week real quick. You've got in the morning rounds Colin Montgomery, Scotty McCarron, and Miguel Henel Jimenez. And then just a couple groups after them, Jeff Maggart, Bernard Langer, and Kenny Perry. In the afternoon, there's a lot more action on Thursday. Of course, those will be early on Friday. But you've got Jerry Kelly, Steve Flesch, David Toms. Just a little bit later, you got Marco Mira, DJ Singh, and then Ian Woosnam. Then you've got Freddie Couples, Jay Haas, and Brant Jobe. Of course, Freddie and Jay are good buddies. And then at 2 o'clock on Thursday, you've got Nick Faldo, who's going to try and tee it up, Mark Calcavecchia, and Tom Watson. So there's some pretty good groups there to watch, especially in the afternoon. Of course, it's going to be on Fox all week. They're going to be doing some stuff on FS1 for the early round coverage and then also on the regular Fox network channels. So you can tune in. Of course, there'll be all the live streaming on USGA.org if you want to go there and watch it on your computer, your smartphone, whatever. I want to mention, too, Carlos, that the USGA also announced the sites for the 2021-2022 U.S. Senior Opens. Omaha Country Club in Saucon Valley. Omaha Country Club and Saucon Valley will host those two events. in those years. So we wanted to get that out there. I guess that's all I got on that, Carlos.
And yes, this is going to be the second time that there's going to be returning to Salem Country Club. Last time was in 2001. Bruce Fleischer won it that year. Hey, on the European Tour, the H&A French Open will be played at the Le Golf National in Guyancourt in France. That is a par 71, stretches to 7,249 yards. If you want to see it Thursday to Friday, you can see it on the Golf Channel. You have to wake up very early. It's at 4:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Saturday and Sunday is going to be 7 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. also on the Golf Channel. The defending champion is Sonchai Jaidi, and this is the first of three straight Rolex Series events that have a $7 million purse. Le Golf National will host the Ryder Cup next year. This is the hosting course for the Ryder Cup next year, so you're going to get a good look at it. John Ram of Spain is playing his first regular European Tour event, his long-awaited first regular European Tour event. Six players from Europe's most recent Ryder Cup team are there at the French Open. Rory McIlroy, he's not playing this week. He's the tournament host next week at the Irish Open, so he elected not to play and go directly there to Northern Ireland and start the preparations for that Dubai duty-free Irish Open next week. Russell Knox is playing three of the next 4 weeks in Europe with a vacation to Italy the week of the Irish Open. So he's definitely trying to make a push on the European Tour and possibly the Ryder Cup next year. The French Open was first played in 1906, won by Arnaud Massey. He won the British Open the following year. The first American to win the French Open was Walter Hagen in 1920, and Byron Nelson won it in 1955. One spectator will be chosen in the opening round to receive four tickets to all competition days at the Ryder Cup next year, Fred.
Sounds like Russell Knox is doing some fence mending with the European Tour. I think he kind of wants to be on some Ryder Cup teams. Sounds like he's trying to do a little politics in there. Hey, the PGA Tour is in our nation's capital in Potomac, TPC Avenal, for the Quicken Loans National. This is one of Tiger Woods' events, and he's normally on hand to greet players, fans, and the media. He will not be in D.C. this week, however, as he's currently undergoing treatment for sleep disorder and painkiller meds. Some quality names will tee it up on Thursday. Ricky Fowler at number 9 in the official world golf ranking is the highest-ranked player in the field. Billy Horschel, Bill Haas, Siwoo Kim, Patrick Reed, and Justin Thomas are just a few of the others, but Fowler is the only name in the top 10 in the world competing this week. They're vying for a piece of $7.1 million total purse, with $1.2 million going to the winner. Did you ever think, Carlos, that we would be talking about a European Tour event, the Open de France, with a $7 million purse, same week, playing on the PGA Tour, a $7 million purse? The European Tour is growing rapidly, Carlos, to be able to do that kind of a purse opposite a regular PGA Tour event. But you can watch all the action from the Quicken Loans on the Golf Channel and CBS this week at the regular times.
Totally, the defending champion there, Billy Hurley. This is going to be the first of two straight PGA Tour events that will be offering four spots to the British Open for players that are not already exempt, provided they finish among the top 12. So that's a good thing to look for this weekend. And on the other tours, the Web.com Tour has the Nashville Golf Open that's going to be played at the Nashville Golf and Athletic Club in Nashville, Tennessee. Purse of $550,000 with $99,000 going to the winner. The money leader there in that tour is Stephen Jager. There's no television coverage for that one. On the Challenge Tour, on the European Tour, the SSC Scottish Hydro Challenge that is going to be played at the McDonald's Pea Valley Golf Club in Aviemore in Scotland. The defending champion, James Heath, well, he's not there. He's now on the European Tour. And the Challenge Tour is the equivalent to the Web.com Tour here in the States. And also on the Symetra Tour, the Tullymore Classic is going to be played at the Tullymore Golf Resort in Canadian Lakes in Michigan. The defending champion, Paola Moreno, there. So that's the events on the other tours this weekend. So Fred, any
I got a couple things real quick here, Carlos. So I want to mention that the Web.com Tour event, the Nashville Golf Open, is benefiting the Snedeker Foundation, which makes a difference in the lives of Middle Tennessee residents, especially children. It was founded in 2012, you know, when Snedeker won the FedEx Cup, the $10 million, he started his foundation. And they give money to several different charities around Middle Tennessee, supports a variety of efforts on both social and athletic fronts, including a Snedeker tour for junior golfers in Tennessee, and they do a nice job with that. And I want to mention also, you mentioned the Sumatra Tour is at Tullamore. That's right here in kind of mid-Michigan, north of Grand Rapids, not too far from Big Rapids. Beautiful area, lakes area in there. It's just a wonderful, wonderful place. I stopped there a couple years ago, went to the Sumatra Tour event, and Tullamore is a fantastic place. They have a couple courses there. Beautiful, just a top flight resort. If you're coming to Michigan, you're looking for someplace to go, check out Tullamore. It's outstanding. So just wanted to get that in there, Carlos.
And with that, we wrap up the look ahead, the four call, with our quick previews for this weekend's action. And now it's time to move to our Par 5 News, where every week we pick five very interesting articles and we talk about them. And Fred, you're going to start on your tee shot, which a very, let's say, interesting issue there with Omar Uresti. So what happened? What did he do?
Well, yeah, you know, Omar Uresti has had a pretty long career on the PGA Tour. He's been up and down a little bit, but he won the PGA Professional Championship last week to earn a spot in the PGA Championship. As you know, they give out 20 spots to the PGA to the club pros, and not everyone is happy about it. However, Uresti spent over 20 years bouncing back and forth between the old Nationwide, now the Web.com Tour, and the PGA Tour. He had to retain his card through Q School on five occasions. So I'm getting some background noise, Carlos. I don't know if you can hear that or not, but there it stopped. In 356 starts, career starts, he made 176 cuts, missed more cuts than he made, 178. He finished third twice, had a total of 14 top tens, and earned $3.8 million. Definitely not Tiger-like numbers, but, you know, he made a good living. He competed in four PGA Tour events last year, which yielded three missed cuts and a T54 in the Barbasol an opposite field event. Some of the career PGA club professionals that toil in the shops and on the driving ranges giving lessons to 20 handicappers didn't appreciate what they felt to be an illegal spot given Uresti in the PGA Professional Championship and his eventual win, which gives him the automatic berth in the PGA Championship in August. They feel the PGA Pro Championship is just for them, not for former touring pros who happen to be nearing the end of their career. Uresti hasn't done anything wrong. He's following the rules, but maybe the rule needs to change. According to the PGA of America, Uresti has met that criteria to hold an A3 life membership status in the Southern Texas section of the PGA of America. And don't expect that rule to change anytime soon. The PGA issued a statement on the subject. The PGA of America has diversified membership, which includes former and current tour players. Omar is eligible to compete in our PGA Professional Championship because PGA Tour pros are eligible for PGA of America Class A membership. He played more than 20 years on tour. Once he was no longer playing, like any other PGA member who had 20-plus active years, Omar became eligible for life membership active. Therefore, eligible to compete in the PGA Professional Championship, in addition, hold PGA office and vote. So, I guess my answer to all those naysayers and complainers, play better and beat an old guy who's been out there for 30 years, and then maybe it won't feel so bad. So, you know, it did raise the question, but Omar didn't do anything wrong. The other guys just need to play a little bit better, Carlos.
Yeah, it's like I read that the one of the, I don't know, I don't remember his name, I'm trying to remember, but he's the, I think he's the chair there of the association in the Woodlands, where he's a lifetime member. And he was saying, you know, I'm not upset at Omar, I'm upset at the process. I mean, if you want to fix it, he didn't do anything wrong. He went by the rules. So the rules are the ones that have to change. So, yeah, it's like you say. I mean, also, you want to play, want to make it? Well, play better. I mean, those are the rules, and it was made by you guys. He's not breaking anything there. Hey,
it's not like the Rusty is a. It's not like he's a 25-year-old guy. I mean, he's what 45 years old. So, these young guys, these young club bros, they just need to play better. They can't let an old guy beat them. Get out there, practice a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, they just want to go and make the PGA Championship just by not practicing. But, hey, I mean, nothing against the PGA professionals. They do an excellent job. But being a pro and being a pro player, it's a different story.
That's a whole different
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
so, anyway, going in.
Carlos, I love this next story. I love this next story you got coming up here. I can't wait to hear what you say about it.
You're going in for a drug raid and come out with stolen golf cart parts? I mean, that appears to be the story. In a
but where's the drug raid? Where is it?
Where is it? That's the drug they had, golf cart parts. I mean, that appears to be the story in a bizarre case.
Are you in South Beach? Are you in downtown Miami? You're in Detroit, downtown Chicago. Where are you here?
That's the Villages, which is a Florida retirement community.
Villages?
Yes, it's not West Palm Beach or anything like that. That community is of more than 150,000 people and famous for its abundance of golf courses. Local deputies raided Wednesday a home in the Villages after numerous neighbor complaints about alleged drug sales from the residents per the Orlando Sentinel. I imagine they were doing it in golf carts. That's why they needed them. I mean, they needed to go on the golf carts and sell the drugs. But the deputies found the suspected drugs in the raid, but that was not all. The raid also uncovered golf cart parts, windshields, seat cushions, and tires, making the home the site of an apparent illegal golf cart shop as well. I mean, I saw the tweet by Mert Price of WFTV. And that picture was worth $1 million. I mean, they have all those things that I've just said. Some Turks County's sheriff's office, Lieutenant Robert Seamer, said that there have been some golf cart stolen in the neighborhood in the Villages, and they were trying to tie some of the parts to some of the stolen vehicles. So it wasn't a car. It was golf carts. WFTV Channel 9 added that some of the five suspects arrested were indeed also suspects in these recent golf cart thefts. So there is a golf cart cartel out there. As WFTV Channel 9 also notes, the 43 golf carts in nearby counties have been stolen in the last few months. As of Thursday morning, investigators had not connected these golf carts parts to any recent theft areas. I mean, I think it's going to be a little bit connecting them now, but the raided home belongs to an elderly man who did not appear to have any knowledge, of the alleged drug and golf cart chop-chop operations going in his home.
It was his granddaughter, right?
Yeah, it was his niece, Kathleen Unruh.
His niece,
claiming to do so to take care of him. You know, uncle, I am going to take care of you. Don't worry, I got money to spend. I mean, I have a cartel here. Not a drug cartel. I have a golf cartel.
Oh,
but
that's
allegedly,
priceless.
He ran both operations without his awareness. Unruh was one of the five arrested Wednesday. Evelyn Freitner told WFTV Channel 9 that it was sad that a family would take advantage of an elderly like that. And, I mean, I couldn't agree more. But this was as bizarre as it could be.
What was this guy's name?
No, I don't have his name. I know I have his name, Kathleen.
Well, I have to add here. This guy should not worry, okay? Because the elderly single gentleman that I know that live in the Villages, and I know a few, okay? They do not hurt for casseroles or female companionship in the Villages. So you should be able to find someone to help take care of you. No problem, buddy. You don't need the niece. Hey, Yeah, the Villages is just, I love everything that comes out of there. That is, you know what, and I've never been there. I've got to go. The next time I go to Florida, I have to put it on my agenda. I've got to get there and check this place out.
Fred,
it is just,
be careful when you leave your golf cart.
I'm not going to take a golf cart. You're cutting in and out just a little bit, Carlos, there at the end, so I just wanted to let you know. Hey, moving on. Our next story on the Par 5 News, we're kind of wondering, the word is around, will Aaron Hills get the chance at another U.S. Open? You know, Carlos, you and Kieran did an excellent job of breaking down the 117th U.S. Open from Aaron Hills last week's show. Aaron Hills saw record low scoring due to the rains and lush conditions of the course. Golf purists that want hard, difficult tracks on tried and true classical golf courses are balking at a return to the rolling sand dunes of Wisconsin anytime soon. Public facilities like Chambers Bay, Pebble Beach, Pinehurst, and Bethpage Back have proven to be worthy U.S. Open courses. The question becomes, will the USGA back off of its penchant for wanting scoring to be closer to par? Or will they give Aaron Hills another chance to prove itself and show its teeth? You know, as I said in my comments this week, they could have made the course much more difficult, and they chose not to because they didn't want to make a lot of waves because they had so many problems on the previous two U.S. Opens. And so they kind of made the conscious decision to leave it a little bit softer, a little bit more playable. The USGA has said that it will choose a classic Midwest venue for its 2027 U.S. Open, maybe Oakland Hills in Detroit, or Inverness is trying really hard. They are pulling out all the stops to try and get that bid for 2027. They've even hired a firm to lengthen the course, change the course, do everything USGA wants. So they're trying. That'll be announced very soon for the 2027 U.S. Open. Another thing that's kind of curious here, large corporate tents are kind of losing their luster at the U.S. Open. Fading away are the 100 to 125 ticket chalets that have crept closer to play and cost, you know what these things cost? $325,000 a week, Carlos, a corporation pays to have one of those tents. And that's not including, you know, when they bring clients in, they take them to play golf, they may take them out to dinner different places while they're there, they have different events going on, they may hire an entertainer to come in and put on a show at a theater or someplace for them. I mean, they spend a lot of money at these things. So more packages are looking at – they're trying to vary that thing a little bit. One of the big guys in the country on this kind of promotion says that the 100-ticket tent is going by the way of the dinosaur. Smaller, nimble, and daily, that is what the market demands. Hospitality – offerings at Aaron Hills range from the Platinum Premier Package on the 18th hole, which costs $325,000 for 125 tickets for the week, to one-day table package for $9,200 along the 13th hole that included 15 tickets. This guy says that the sales at Aaron Hills were down about 10% corporate sales, I'm talking about, from last year's event held at Oakmont. That's not drastic, but it's definitely noticeable. And it might be because it's in Milwaukee rather than, a larger city. Maybe, I don't know. Marketing and promotion for Fortune 500 corporations continue to change. It's hard to justify a $325,000 cost for just 1 week of golf revelry at a golf tournament, Carlos. So it's like everything else. It continues to change. I see these things when I go to tournaments, these big hospitality tents and all the stuff that, you know, the free booze and the free food and everything that's going on, those things. It's expensive. I can't fathom how a corporation can afford to spend that kind of stuff.
I certainly can't afford it. Maybe you, but I certainly can't. So we'll see. We were talking about that last week, that you can, Kieran and I, even together we can't. So we'll see. Anyway, the Solheim Cup, the biennial match play event that features the top players in women's golf representing the U.S. and Europe, is set to return to network television for the first time in 15 years when NBC airs the singles matches on Sunday, August 20th. Golf Channel and NBC will combine for nearly 30 hours of live tournament action of the three-day event from the first tee shot to the final putt, Friday through Sunday, August 18th to the 20th.
Golf Channel will also air live coverage of both the Solheim Cup opening and closing ceremonies. And on Sunday, August 20th, Golf Channel will air the Sunday singles matches from noon to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, with NBC continuing coverage from 4 p.m. Eastern Time until the event's conclusion. Molly Solomon, Golf Channel's executive producer, said that the NBC Sports Group has continued to raise the profile of the best women's golfers in the world in bringing three LPGA Tour major championships to network coverage and introducing new audiences to women's professional golf, and that returning the Solheim Cup to NBC was the natural next step in the evolution of their partnership with the LPGA Tour. Then LPGA Commissioner Michael Wan, he added that the passion, the patriotism, and the drama of the Solheim Cup make it one of the premier events in sports, and they are thrilled to be able to showcase it in an even bigger and broader audience on NBC. Their team has been focused on expanding their network TV coverage, and the Solheim Cup, that is going to be on U.S. soils in Des Moines, Iowa, will be a perfect opportunity for them to bring the LPGA to that much broader audience and attract even more fans to the best in women's golf. Returning to U.S. soil this year, the Solheim Cup will be contested at Des Moines Golf and Country Club in the West Des Moines, Iowa, Friday through Sunday, August 18th to the 20th. As you might remember, the U.S. defeated Europe 14.5 to 13.5 at the last Solheim Cup in Germany in 2015 that featured that dramatic come-from-behind final day by the U.S. en route to the closest Solheim Cup in history. Fred, the LPGA continues to make strides and reach. In addition to comprehensive coverage of the Solheim Cup, Golf Channel has coverage of four of five women's major championships this year, with three majors airing on NBC, which is going to be the KPMG Women's PGA Championship this weekend, then the Rico Women's British Open, and the last one, the Evian Championship, later on this year.
Well, I'll tell you what, Michael Wan just never fails to impress. He just keeps pushing. He's never satisfied with the status quo. He's always looking for the next thing. You know, this KPMG Women's PGA coming up this week is an example of that. You know, able to put something together with PGA to get a bigger purse and make a bigger event for the women. Getting the Solheim Cup on network television. I mean, Golf Channel is nice. They do a good job. But not everybody watches the Golf Channel. Everybody watches NBC. So even if it's there, somebody might just watch it on the chance, and they might become a golf fan. So I think that is really a big deal that the Solheim Cup is going to be on NBC for the singles. Hey, Carlos, on a sad note here on our final story for the Par 5 News tonight, Sandy Tatum was one of the true legends of golf. He was a world-class golfer but chose to influence his love of the game from the amateur and administrative side of things. Tatum left a huge mark on the game of golf when he decided to make the 1974 U.S. Open at Windfoot more than just an average golf tournament. He made the course so brutal and severe that the players were not used to these harsh conditions and called the 1974 U.S. Open the Massacre at Windfoot. Phil Irwin went on to win that year, but Tatum set the precedent to make U.S. Open golf courses more difficult than any other tournament in the world. He answered his critics simply by saying, "The USGA wants to identify the best player in the nation." We are lucky tonight to have someone that knew Mr. Tatum personally, and he's going to tell us a little bit about Sandy. Jim Hand is a former president of the USGA and worked closely with Sandy Tatum for many years. Mr. Hand turned 100 years old earlier this year and still follows the game of golf very closely. So, Carlos, we've got a little three-minute interview with Mr. Hand. If you could play that, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Let's play it.
We are so happy to be talking to Jim Hand, a former president of the USGA. And he worked very closely with Sandy Tatum over the years. And with the passing of Mr. Tatum, we thought it only good that we talked to someone who had firsthand knowledge of Sandy and the tremendous effect that he had on the game of golf through the years. Mr. Hand, welcome to the Back Nine Report.
Sandy was a wonderful guy.
You came up to the USGA with him. Matter of fact, you were the president directly after Sandy was president. Widely credited with making the U.S. Open something a little bit more difficult, a little bit more challenged for the best golfers in the world. He made the statement that we were trying to identify the best golfers. And
yeah,
so,
and what, Wingfoot.
Yeah, Wingfoot. But that tradition kind of got carried on. Now, what was your status in that? What was your thinking along those lines?
Sandy was a golf purist. Everything he did, he aimed at perfection, had the highest standards of any person I had met in golf terms. He was a delight to be with. He was friendly, outgoing, wonderful guy. I first went on the committee in 75 and was very fortunate to be part of the championship committee, which was one of the two important ones in the USGA in the hierarchy of things, rules and championships. That happened to be something I liked as opposed to the rules. Sandy was warm, friendly, but he did things right. And Sandy was the person who will always be supportive. He was out front, but he was never intentionally being out front, if you will.
What do you feel is maybe his greatest contribution to the game of golf? There were so many things over the years with USGA and with golf. Or, you know, he had a hand at restoring Harding Park in San Francisco and being involved out there. But do you feel like in the USGA there was one thing that that maybe he was very proud of or you felt really had a profound effect on the game?
Well, of course, Harding Park was very important to him from his hometown. I guess the sense of integrity. He seemed to treat golf as almost as though a religion. He was a golf purist. He was able to convey that sense to other people, and particularly those of us who worked with or for him. To me, that was awfully important. I think of him kindly. When he died, of course, I didn't know that he was ill, but I had heard a few years before that he was still playing good golf. He had a swing that was known to every member of the San Francisco golf community. He paused at the top of the swing, but he could hit a drive quite well and a very good player.
We certainly want to thank Jim Hamm, former USGA president, for taking a minute or two to talk about Sandy Tatum with us on Back Nine Report. Mr. Hamm, thank you again so much.
Okay, Fred.
There you have it. That was Jim Hamm, the former USGA director. So, Fred, any final comments to close that segment before we go on to our VIGs?
Yeah, just a quote from current USGA executive director Mike Davis. All of us at the USGA are deeply saddened by the passing of truly one of the great individuals ever involved with golf. Sandy Tatum certainly impacted the USGA in immeasurable ways. But more important were his countless and significant contributions to the game. He will long be remembered as one of the greats in golf. And you know, Carlos, Sandy Tatum, you know, Bill Caldwell, you know, you've got Mike Davis. These are the big names in USGA over the years. There's a couple others, but Sandy Tatum was a giant in the game. He left a huge imprint on the game of golf, and we lost an important person in golf last week, Carlos.
And our condolences go to his family. So definitely, I second those thoughts about him. With that, we wrap up our weekend backspin. I mean, our par five news. I'm sorry. Now let's move on to our VIG, very important guest of the week. We don't have one; we have two. Jane Blaylock and Jen Stephenson, they're going to be talking about the senior LPGA championship that's going to be held at French Lick. So, Fred, if you can tell us a little bit about this interview before we play.
Carlos, you have no idea how excited I was to get to talk to Jen Stephenson.
I was a fan.
I really was a fan. Yeah. Of everything
okay.
You can imagine. Yeah. the Sports Illustrated cover, you know, the whole deal. I was in, okay? I was there. You know, the first ever Women's Senior LPGA Championship will be held at French Lick in a couple of weeks. We had the chance to talk with the legends, Jane Blaylock, who actually started the Legends Tour for ex-LPGA players over the age of 45, and Jan Stevenson, who was a star of the LPGA back in the 80s. One of the first women to come up from Australia and really be a success here in America. She knew her golf. She could play golf, but she knew how to market herself. She really grew her brand. She used her sex appeal and made a lot of money doing it. And I was really excited to be able to get to talk to her. It was a good week when we did this. So go ahead and play the tape, Carlos.
Let's play it.
We're here with Jane Blaylock at the French Lick Resort in French Lick, Indiana. We're at the Pete Dye course this morning. And Jane, you have been very instrumental in getting the Legends Tour started. Look what it's turning into.
Well, I mean, the folks at French Lick are so important in the whole history of the LPGA Legends. We had the LPGA Legends Championship here for 4 years, and now we have a major tournament on the LPGA schedule, the Senior LPGA. We've been trying to get that for 15 years, and how appropriate that it's here at the French Lick Resort.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people realize that the LPGA Legends Tour has been around for quite a while. We've been hosting 10, 12 tournaments a year in different places, and this will be the first major championship on the Legends Tour, the LPGA Senior Championship at French Lick.
Absolutely. And next year we have the U.S. Women's Senior Open. So to have, and I think it's pretty clever that we have the LPGA Senior Championship first, in advance of the USGA's event. But it's really putting the LPGA Legends on the map. You know, we have been around for almost 15 years. You know, people say, gee, why doesn't the LPGA have a senior tour? And that makes my blood curdle. And yes, they do. We have the Legends Tour. And, you know, boasting all the great names in women's golf, we'll certainly all be here vying for that very large first place check.
I know Michelle McGann is here, Jan Stevenson here. Those are just two of the women at play. I think Nancy Lopez still plays every once in a while. You have some of the top names from back in the day that still come out here and compete and want to win.
Oh, yes, we speak very well. I mean, Julie Engster, she won 2 years ago. Trish Johnson won last year. Laura Davies, everyone's favorite golfer. And then, you know, Pat Bradley, Patty Sheehan, the Hall of Famers. We have a great combination of those who are just coming off the LPGA and excited to enjoy the camaraderie of the Legends Tour, and those who have won 30, 40 golf tournaments and made such a name for themselves and who are adored by all the fans.
In addition, there's going to be a Sumatra tour that runs 3 or 4 days prior to the tournament. So if fans are interested, they could come in and watch the future stars of the LPGA, the Sumatra tour, play on the Ross course here at French Lick. Stick around a couple days and watch the senior legends LPGA.
It's absolutely. You get the the present and the future and the past all here in 1 week of activities. That on the Legends Tour we have an honors division, which means that you've won a lot of tournaments, but you're also a little more mature than some others. And I am one of those, and we'll be playing alongside the younger players on the Ross course on that Sunday, prior to our event and their last round. So they've done a really nice job integrating, I think, all aspects of the LPGA.
Well, Jane, we're certainly glad that you've had the foresight and the vision to get the LPGA Legends Tour going. And now with the two majors, the one this year and the one next year, looks really good things, bright for the future for the Legends Tour.
Well, I think those two majors are really going to generate the attention that we need to get us more tournaments. So we're in a good place, and thank you for your support.
Thank you, Jane, so much. Glad to have you on the Back Nine Report.
All right. Pleasure to be here.
Happy to be talking with Jan Stevenson, who was a star, a standout on the LPGA Tour. I think 3 major titles, 16 LPGA Tour wins. Jan, we are delighted to be talking to you today.
Thank you very much.
you're still out here playing on the Legends Tour, out here mixing it up. What you get your juices flowing to come out here and compete?
Well, definitely competing is the end all of playing golf. I mean, it's just the final thing. I mean, that's one of the great things about golf, you know, still playing for $2 Nassau's or whatever. I mean, everybody does it, but there's something about that trophy that it really gets me excited and it helps me work on my game. And it's really fun to see the players that I played against, you know, for 30 years ago, and it's fun to be able to compete with them again.
But it's a little bit more laid back out here on the Legends Tour. You're not kind of trying to step on anybody's throat. There's a lot more laughs, a lot more talking.
There is. You know, we actually socially spend more time together now, which is really quite strange because a lot of us were almost enemies, and now we're friends, and, you know, we do a lot off the season as well. And so it's fun because it's fun to compete, and yet once we're done, we can go enjoy everyone's company. So it's a totally different atmosphere.
Tell us what it feels like, this being the first major championship on the Legends Tour, which has been around for about 15 years, but now you have a major.
Well, I kind of feel a little bit sad because I'm not, young enough now to probably really compete on the level I'd like to. But the good thing is I play on the Honors Tour as well, which is the 60 and over tour. So I'm going to actually play in both. I'm going to play in the Honors and then play in the championship because with it being our first major, I can't resist. I'm going to have to try. So I'm going to be working hard on my game.
Tell us a little bit about the Pete Dye course. You've been having the tournament here, the Legends Tournament here, for, I think, 4 years now. So you've played this course a few times.
I love the Pete Dye course. It's, you know, the good thing is that I've lost a lot of power as you get older. And so this one, it's more accuracy and your stroke game's really important. I mean, obviously, if you've got power, it's great. But if you miss a fairway here, you're dead. So that's it's very challenging, and I love the golf course. It's so beautiful.
Jan, over the years, and every golfer struggles with something in their game. What is one thing that you continuously work on to keep improving?
Well, I love technique. I mean, I love to see all the new things that all the players are doing, the LPGA and the PGA Tour. So I'm fascinated with the power that they have. So I'm always trying to work on that, which is really hard to do, but it's just wonderful to watch. And, you know, I do clinics, and I actually spend a lot of time with the new coach, the new golf coaches, and it's fun to see that. So I'm always working on my long game.
LPGA Legends Tour and Honors Tour. Jan Stevenson, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thanks, Fred. It's great.
There you have it, Jane Blaylock and Jan Stevenson. And definitely Fred was having a blast interviewing Jan Stevenson there. I mean, he could have talked for hours in that interview.
I could have. Yeah, you're exactly right. There was a lot of people around, and she didn't have a tremendous amount of time, but it was great to get to talk to her. I was such a fan of hers. It was just a treat. But this event, I have to tell you, Carlos, the French Lick is a wonderful facility. Anybody that's mm-hmm. not been there, it's just a beautiful, beautiful facility. The Pete Dye course sits up on the hill, up on the mountain. It's the second highest peak in Indiana. You can see for like 40 miles up there. And the Pete Dye built a golf course up there that's just second to none. You got to see it. It's really something. And then the old Donald Ross course, which is celebrating its 100th anniversary this year, is hosting a Sumatra Tour event on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And then the Legends, Senior LPGA Championship, starts on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. So you've got a Sumatra Tour event for 3 days, and then you've got the Senior Legends event for 3 days. It's quite a deal. I commend the LPGA for putting this all together with the young and the old like this, and young and mature, I guess I should say. It's a unique facility and a great event. I think it's going to be fantastic.
And with that, we'll wrap up our VSG Very Important Guest of the Week segment. Now it's time for the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic, and each of us will take our own shots at it, and we're deciding to talk about one of the two majors that is going to be this week. This week, the LPGA is moving to the state of Illinois for the playing of the KPMG Women's PGA Championship. many may remember, and I remember this, I was watching it. I was stick to the TV there watching last year's exciting finish when Brooke Henderson defeated Lydia Ko in a playoff. They were going battling back and forth. It was anything you can do, I can do it better. It was incredible golf level play there, and Brooke Henderson won her first and only major to date. This is going to be played at the Olympia Fields Country Club in Olympia Fields, Illinois. The course is a par 71. It stretches out to 6,588 yards. The purse is $3.5 million. The first prize is $525,000. If you want to see it on the TV, the coverage will be Thursday and Friday from 12:30 to 3:30 p.m. on Golf Channel. And if you want to catch it on the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, it'll be 3 to 6 p.m. on NBC. The defending champion, like I said, is Brooke Henderson. Soyeon Ryu, you might remember, went to number one in the world last week with her win. She's the third player to reach number one this year, not only this year, this month. Okay, that ranking will be up for grabs this week with no less than four players. Arya Yutanagarn, Lydia Ko, and Lexi Thompson are the other three that can claim the top spot with a win. Ryu's victory ended 16 consecutive weeks without a multiple winner. She has won the previously the first major of the year, the A&A Inspiration. This course here on the men's side served as a U.S. Open host in 2003 when Jim Furyk won it. Other major champions there have been Jerry Barber in 1961, was the PGA Championship, Johnny Farrell, the 1928 U.S. Open, and Walter Hagen, the 1925 PGA Championship. Soyeon Ryu is coming after to this tournament after becoming the first LPGA player to cross the $1 million this year. Lexi Thompson is just $410 short of that mark. She'll make it here. Michelle Wee definitely is one to look for. She has three straight top fives and has earned $326,000 to move up to number eight on the money list and is number seven in the Solheim Cup standings. She was just number 13 outside of anything about 2 months ago. Thompson, Ryu, and Yimby Park are separated by .137 in scoring average, with Thompson leading the way at 68.81. She's been playing incredibly. This is going to be the third year the PGA of America has run this event. It was previously held at Westchester and Sahali last year, and this will be the 17th tournament of 34 on this year's event, so we're right at the midterm mark. It is also the second of five major championships that is going to be played this year, Fred.
Yeah, you mentioned Olympia Fields in Chicago. It's an old golf course. It was designed by Willie Park Jr. It opened for play in 1915. It's hosted four major championships and five Western Opens. So this is a mature golf course. It's hilly. There's some ditches and creeks and things that run through it. It's a classic old-style golf course. So, Carlos, this you said a mouthful. I think you previewed it right there when you said who won the 2003 U.S. Open here, Jim Furyk. You know, he's a ball control guy, a ball striker. That's the kind of player that we're gonna that should do well this week at the KPMG Women's PGA. You did such a good job doing the background. I'm just gonna jump right into the trending players right now. You mentioned, you know, the great shootout last year with Lydia Ko and Brooke Henderson, with Brooke getting the better of Lydia last year. She is a defending champion, coming off a win at the Meyer Classic just a couple weeks ago, has three top tens, and is number seven in the LPGA money list. Two of Brooke's wins came in the Northwest, you know, the Portland Classic and then at Sahali last year in this tournament. They're courses that are cut out of dense forest. She seems to like to work the ball off the towering pines to find the fairway and fire at pins. Well, this course is cut out of the same mold. It's an old classic golf course, like I say, and you're going to have to be able to find the fairways and go down some tight, narrow approaches. Newly appointed world number one, Soyeon Ryu, has won twice this year and has only finished outside the top 10 once. She's been in the top 10 all year except for one time. this rolling tree-lined golf course should be the perfect fit for her. As I mentioned, you know, the most consistent players, earlier we talked about that, So-Young Ryu, Lydia Ko, and Stacey Lewis, they all three are ball control players, ball strikers. This is their kind of setup. Ryu Jutanagarn, she just won in Canada, has 9 top tens. She was number one for a couple of weeks until So-Young Ryu just overtook her. She's the most powerful player on the tour right now, but will her power game relate well to the tight fairways, Olympia Fields? You know, she'll probably hit that 2-iron a lot, maybe in a 3-iron or 4-iron off the tee. Don't see her hitting many drivers. If she can keep that in the fairway and then attack the pins, maybe it will. Lexi Thompson, she's number 2 on the money list, has 6 top 10s. She won at Kings Mill and would have 2 wins, one of those a major, if the rules official hadn't taken the ANA inspiration away from her. In her last 4 starts, she has a win and 2 runners-up. She finished 2nd the last 2 weeks. She's at the top of the form right now and should be the favorite this week. Like Aria, control may be more of a factor than length at Olympia Fields. Can Lexi dial it back and find fairways instead of the trees? Inji Chun, they haven't called her name much this year, but she does have 6 top 10s and is number 4 on the money list. She's always a threat to win, especially big events like this week. I like her overall control game here also. Michelle Wee, you mentioned her, has finished inside the top 5 in 4 of her last 5 events. She really has it rolling. She's playing at a very high level right now, and if her putter behaves, she could add another major to her resume. Like Lexi and Aria, not sure Wee's length is an advantage here. So, we'll see how that works out. Stacey Lewis seems to have other priorities in life right now, but finished T4 in Arkansas and can always be counted on to be in the mix in the big events. Olympia Fields may lend itself well to Stacey's game. What about Lydia Ko? She's not been the same player this year as we've seen over the past 3 years. 0 wins this season. She's fallen out of the number 1 spot in the world. She's way down at number 19 on the money list. But a win at the Women's PGA this week with its huge purse could move her up that list very rapidly. Her best finish this year was a runner-up in Hawaii back in April. She does have 3 top 10s in her last 4 starts, so she's trending in the right direction. Again, her control style of golf, Lydia normally plays. One would think Olympia Fields would be perfect venue for her. You mentioned Amy Yang. She's been quietly putting together a very good season. She won in Thailand in February and is coming off a runner-up in Arkansas. So, there's another name for you. And I'm going to throw another one out. Maria Jutanagarn, Aria's big sister, is coming off a runner-up in Arkansas and 4 consecutive top 10 finish. Is this her time to step out of her younger sister's shadow and shine? Let's not forget about the former number 1, Envy Park. Before Brooke Henderson won this event last year, Envy had won 3 consecutive PGA, Women's PGA Championships, 2013, 2015. She won the HSBC Champions, has 4 top 10s, and is coming off a T6 in Arkansas. She might just get excited about winning another major. And then you've got players like Christy Kerr, who's number 5 on the money list. Not been playing well of late. She had a run of a 4th, a 7th, a win, and a runner-up, and a 5th in April and early May. But she's a tough competitor and a wily veteran. Could Christy add another major to her mantle? We haven't heard much from Anna Nordqvist, Jessica, or Nelly Korda, for that matter, lately. They are quality players that like the big stage. So, there are probably, Carlos, 10 other young women that could win this week, but these are the hottest players on tour right now that are trending. Olympia Fields in Chicago should be a great venue for this women's tournament. With a big purse, this is a true major for the ladies and should be exciting to watch.
I am going to be watching it, definitely. I mean, So-Young Ryu, she's looking to solidify her new number one ranking. Aria Jutanagarn, of course, she will be looking to regain that top spot she held for just 2 weeks. Lydia Ko, she's still looking to regain that form that had her at number one for so long. But players to watch out. I'm feeling this one this week. I mean, Lexi Thompson. She could become number one with a win this week. I think she's just that close. She's been playing amazing, and this could be the one that finally propels her to that number one that is being awaited from her. Brooke Henderson, she's the defending champion, and she has a history of winning on Parkland courses, so definitely she's one to watch. I want to see Inbay Park. Remember, she is a three-time winner of this championship. No better ball striker in the LPGA than Inbay Park when she's on, and she won it three straight years in a row. If you want to go for somebody to watch out, Inbay Park is one of them. Some long shots that I would like for you to see, and it's not impossible that they can check there. You mentioned one of them, Maria Yutanagar. She suddenly, you know, you mentioned she's Aria's older sister, but I have been hearing Liz very recently, she's not being, suddenly she isn't referred anymore as Aria's sister. She's really gaining some ground, and it's already up to number 33 in the Rolex ranking, so she keeps going up and up. Another player, Amy Yang, she has her game in great shape. At the right time, she's one to look out. Jarena Piller, what a great place would be this one to pick up that first win that has avoided her for so long. So another player that I want you to keep an eye on is a Marina Alex. The American has been very, very stealthy. Okay, she has been quietly, very recently, she recorded her four top 10 finish of the year. So that's one of them that you have to look in. And also, my pick for Rookie of the Year, Sung-hyun Park. She's been playing great. And last year, this was where she got herself noticed. So that's one of them to look for. Some pairings that you have to look for. Of course, the marquee pairing is going to be Lydia Ko, Inbay Park, and Lexi Thompson. What a threesome there. Soyeon Ryu, the number one in the world, is going to be paired with Jarena Piller and Susanne Pedersen, who's celebrating her 10th anniversary of her first major win in this tournament. Aria Yutanagan, she's going to be with Brooke Henderson and Allison Lee. Michelle Wee would be paired with Stacey Lewis and Sandra Gall. Chrissy Kerr and will be there with Aimi Asato and Charlie Hall. So, Fred, any final thoughts before we move on after this preview?
Boy, that's kind of the old and young of it. Charlie Hall with Aimi Asato and Kristen Kerr. Aimi's retiring, right? This is her.
Yeah.
This is her last year.
This is her final year. Yeah.
Yeah. So she'll feel like she's walking around in a old folks home or something. I'm just gonna say one more thing, Carlos, real quick here. You know, we had someone on the show a couple of weeks ago that's looking to make a big break. Madeline Sagstrom, this could be a good moment for her. She's starting to play a little bit better, gain some confidence. So
yeah, no, that's one definitely out there. I really didn't mention her, but she's really one that we have to look forward to. I like her game, and I think that she's making strides to finally make the Solheim Cup, so we'll see how she does. We wish her the best. With that, we wrap up that, but before we move on to our final pods, Fred, we have to comment. How can we move on to the final pods without mentioning that the President of the United States was videoed making a big golf etiquette faux pas? I mean, President Trump was videoed driving his golf buggy all over a green at Bedminster Golf Club. If it would have been somebody else, there was just nothing out of it. They would just go to him, hey, you can't do that. Why didn't anybody go and say, hey, why are you doing this? You know this is a massive faux pas. Why are you doing it? So what's your take on that video from President Trump?
Well, I just laugh, I guess, when I see it. first of all, what a stupid thing to do. He does own the golf course, so I guess he can do any damn thing he wants to do, okay? That's the first thing.
What the heck?
Exactly. It's going to cost. He's going to pay for it, so what the hell, you know? And then the other part, he is the President of the United States, so – you know, he can pretty much do anything he wants to do anyhow. So I don't know who's going to tell him he can't do it, but, boy, that was bad optics. I don't know what that guy thinks sometimes. Why would you do that? Maybe he had a sore ankle. Maybe he had a bad back. I don't know. But driving the cart up on the green, that just makes you cringe. You go, oh, what is he doing? You know, we're taught that from when we begin playing. That is a, you know, complete no. Keep the golf carts 30 yards away from the greens. Don't even get them close, you know. They put up signs so you can't even drive up to the fairway. You can't get close to the green. You got to go around. And here he is driving on the green on a course that's going to host, the U.S. Women's Open. So I don't know. That was not good. It amazed me, but it has gone viral, and everybody's taking a shot at it for sure.
Yeah, but it's just because of who he is. Otherwise, I would have done it. Nobody would have even placed a video on it. I might have been thrown out of the club, but
they just kick you out for a lifetime. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Hey, let's go for the final pots. On one of his final trips to Minnesota, the King Arnold Palmer walked the TPC Twin Cities with a notebook in hand, drawing out plans for how he would update the Blaine Golf Course to make it suitable for a PGA Tour event. Now, Holly Skatner, organizer of the annual 3M Championship held there, and the course are trying to make the late Palmer's vision a reality. Partner again with 3M, the group has made a bid to the PGA Tour to host a tournament in 2019, and it's optimistic it will be granted an event that could be held annually at the TPC Twin Cities. While Wisconsin hosted the U.S. Open last week and very successfully, Ohio and Illinois are the only Midwest states with a regular PGA Tour event. But after the success of the U.S. Open in Erin Hills last weekend and the Ryder Cup at Hazeltine in Chaska last fall, Kapner said the Midwest definitely deserves a PGA Tour stop. Also, there will be no excuses next year when the men can tee it up at Goulaine, then drive a short ways to Carnoustie for the Open Championship. The 2018 Aberdeen Asset Management Scottish Opens are headed back to Goulaine, a first for the women. Ricky Fowler took the men's edition of the historic links in 2015. I mean, some images from day one and the week at Goulaine were showing a lot of enthusiastic and numerous crowds there. And so this would be a wise decision that's going to be held there at the Scottish Open. And to close my segment, behold the power of genetics. At Tuesday's Stacey Lewis Invitational at Fayetteville in Arkansas Country Club, John Daly's kid provided the latest example of the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. John Daly II, the 13-year-old son of the 1991 PGA Tour Rookie of the Year, did something that many weekend hackers are still trying to do on Fayetteville Country Club's 190-yard fifth hole. He aced it. Daly's son appears to have a serious knack for the game his father took by storm when he won the 1991 PGA Championship and 1995 Open Championship. At the PNC Father and Son Challenge in December, Fred, he beat out his dad on a hole. So there you have it. Like father, like son.
Well, John was pretty impressive in that PNC thing. I was impressed, I'll tell you that. Did you see where Big John had to withdraw this week from the U.S. Senior Open because of a bad back? So we won't see John this week. Yeah. Hey, real quickly, the Golf Club of Houston, which is the site of the Shell Houston Open, has been targeted by vandals three times in the past 2 years. They're a little peeved about it. They've offered a $1,000 reward. They also have the vandals on tape, so they're looking to catch those guys. Rory McIlroy made the cut. He didn't play that well. He used three different putters during the week. He spent a couple hours trying out five different putters at the beginning of the week. So he's still trying to figure it out, but he did shoot that good round on Sunday. So it looks like the University of Illinois will continue Big Ten titles in golf in the foreseeable future. They just gave men's golf coach Mike Small, one of the winningest NCAA golf coaches in the nation, a new six-year, $2 million deal to stay at the University of Illinois. That's big for a golf coach at a school. Good for him. And then we've got a 10-year-old, Seth Damsgaard, has a nice little golf business going. He's partnered with Scott Brady of Precise Yardage Books to illustrate those yardage books they use on the Web.com tour. The drawings of the course are combined efforts. Seth takes the satellite images from Google Earth, graphically designs the layout. Before he teamed up with Brady, he was making the books for courses he would play in junior golf tournaments. So here's a 10-year-old starting a business, getting it going, working with the yardage books. You know, Carlos, kids today are a lot smarter than I was. I just baled hay and mowed lawns for gas money when I was young. You know, I don't know what you did, but I worked my butt off.
No, I didn't do those things. I was just playing tennis and some other stuff. So no.
Oh, you're a rich kid then.
No. I had a lot of sports to do, so I didn't have that time. But anyway, Back Niners, that will wrap up another week of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIGs, very important guests of the week, Jane Blaylock and Jen Stevenson. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or TuneIn. Also, remember Roku TV if you want to see it. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy and be blessed and enjoy the great game of golf. There are going to be 2 majors this weekend, so enjoy them. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
It's Macy's 4th of July mattress sale with the lowest prices of the season from Sealy, Serta, Beautyrest, iComfort, and more. Shop specials now through Tuesday. Plus, get free delivery and setup with a minimum mattress purchase of $787. Shop our stores, go to Macy's.com, or call 1-800-MACY-BED. Macy's 4th of July mattress sale. Savings off regular and sale prices. Exclusions apply.
Ready to make fashion fireworks? Right now at Old Navy, get up to 60% off the entire store during Old Navy's Red, White, and New sale. Save big with items for $2, $4, $6, and $8, including women's tanks for just $2. And up to 60% off summer essentials like flip-flops, tank tops, swimwear, and shorts. Get more bang for your buck with up to 60% off your favorite all-American styles right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Select styles only. Entire store offer valid 6/28 to 7/5. Excludes clearance, gift cards, register lane items, jewelry, today only deals, 2-day only deals.